Friendly mother, I worked in the brewery, I never drank beer, and that's what she did. She was a real one for the old Glenbuckle, she was, you know.
Okay.
Anyway, we got on, you know, after style, but of course, some of the things I heard them talking about after that funeral, I never forgot, you know.
Then
of course, many of my sisters, they were all right, but I was always on my head in my family, you know. I never sort of clicked at all.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, the old girl, my mother, you know, when she was alive, she used to say I was, you know, different from the rest of them. Actually, I look back on it, I could see now I was. I was a quiet family. The others have all had for a good time. They were all rather inclined to go round to the boozers at night, you know, and congregate and meet there, you know. Funny thing was, you know, when I worked in a brewery, it was a joke in our family. I was the good one for the drinking.
Mm-hmm.
I had a very social life, but I don't make
that. Well, what happened after that when you got downstairs?
Okay. What happened when you got downstairs? Oh, I heard him napping away about one thing and the other, about insurance policies and God knows what else, and about a funeral and whether I should be buried with the old lady or what, you know. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I remember the funeral very well. It was a nice old day, I tell you, and I think the funeral I paid for my funeral, it came down in torrents. I said, they were going to know where I was anyway. I went with them in the carriage, which we had horses in those days, you know.
Yeah.
I sat there, you know, and it made me laugh. You know, they were following me, and I was riding with them. You might say, well, they didn't know I was there. Once or twice, I think they said that, you know, they thought it was a bit chilly, and I put some wet on all that, so they thought it was there. You know, and they thought it was, well, they couldn't have thought it was me. But,
yeah.
That's a funny thing when you're dead, you know, people don't know how real things can be and how much more sensitive in a way you are. This is if for the first time you're hearing properly and in a sense in a way you're seeing properly too. Which you're seeing everything, not just what is there in front of you, but you're sort of seeing into people. Oh, I know a few things about my family, I never do. They're in most sorts, you know.
But after the funeral, what happened to you then?
Oh, well, the old lady, she'd been around, you know. She'd been dead some few years, but she kept coming to me, and she said, you're not staying here, are you? So I said, well, I'm staying here, where am I going then? So she should come with me. I said, oh. I didn't seem to be much point to stay, never took life at a notice on me. I mean, they all seemed to be enjoying themselves after the funeral. They was having a very old dinner, then they all had to go out to the apartment. That didn't interest me that much. And mother said, she might just as well come away and stay here. So I said, well, I don't make it a tale. And she said, you will, you'll be all right, boy, you know. So she said, I said, it's all very well. She said, come on. I said, where we're going? She says, we're going away from all this. I said, oh, well, you know, I just couldn't cut down at all. In a way, she says, close your eyes. And the funny thing was, although I could see my mother and converse with her, and she looked as she was all many years back when I was a nipper, I could feel other people there rubbing sin. And I seem to realize, I said, I don't know, I have a very strong sort of feeling of several people, and I don't see them. She says, you will eventually. She says, but just you relax yourself and don't worry and fret yourself like, you know. Anyway, I said, well, why don't you want me to do that? I do that. I go to now, it's the next thing I do. It's as if I lost consciousness, you know, it was the kingdom. And I woke up and found myself lying on a couch, I suppose it was, a sort of sofa, you know.
Mm-hmm.
As in that matter of fact, when I sort of came to and looked round, it was, well, almost as if I was back when I was a boy.
Okay.
My mother had a nice little place, a little cottage place, you know, and well, this was when we were children, we hung in the country, you know. But my father brought us all out to London, he got some job, you know, in London, and we were moved, but I always remember the childhood days in the country, and this was just like my mother's old place that she had when I was a little nipper, you know.
Yes.
And I said to her, I said, oh, is this somebody? And she says, ain't it? She says, it's not that nice of a place we always had when you were a little boy and you used to love it so much in the countryside. She says, well, it's just the same, but I never liked it in London, she said. But it was her father, of course, he got a good job.
Mm-hmm.
We'd have been foolish not to take him, but I always hated him in the country because she was your country more than me, was my mum, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, she says, this is it. She says, well, I always craved for when I was in London, be back in my little country places. And mm-hmm. you know, she says, it's just simple. And it certainly was very like. I said, it was funny, have you got a place like this? And she says, well, I was always in my mind, you know, I always wanted it. And then some strange ways. Well, perhaps I hoped and liked to think, she says, I deserved it. But she said, I didn't mean this, you know, do it. I said, ah, you do. Sign there. She thought the world of us children. She wasn't like so often, you know. She devoted herself to the family, you know.
And what are you doing now,
Mr. Stanton? Oh, well, I know this sounds almost stupid, because I'm not an educated man. I wasn't exactly even, I could read and write, which is more my mother could. She couldn't read and write a word, you know. She never had no proper schooling when she was a little girl. She was going to be up early in the morning just to go out into the field, you know, picking, seven picking even, and she was quite a baby. Well, her mother used to take her out, and she was quite a baby. Of course, it's, things have changed. And said, call me, I teach the youngsters. I don't mean babies exactly, but you get young lads come over there, never as you know. And I'm very fond of children, this was. And I'm able to help them, not teach them the normal lessons, not to have a school, not read and write, not arithmetic, all that, help, you know, but about life, about nature, about countryside, and all the things I've learned, which have to do with character, and building, you know, making something of yourself as a person, you know, and giving them an insight into, well, how to live their lives and how to appreciate the things that really matter, and help them to get rid of their old ideas and discard lots of things that hold them back. You get people come over here and they carry over all sorts of thoughts and ideas and opinions, and all these things are really a barrier to that progress, you know.
How do you find what the children are like when they come over? Are their minds more necessarily open or?
I think generally speaking, with youngsters, I think their minds are more plastic. They're not so firm and so fixed as adults are. Some of the worst people to deal with, of course, are those who've got very strong fixed views, which, of course, people do have in their adult life. But the youngsters are more plastic, more pliable, you can talk to them and they can understand more easily and they can soon get rid of any strong ideas that have been instilled into them that perhaps their parents or teachers had, which quite frankly were not really any help to them, but often there were barriers.
And your school you go to,
Henry? Oh yes, there's like a vast dormitory here, you see, and there's a vast building. Well, I don't know if that's how well in a vast building which you could call a sort of college where youngsters congregate, they play games, they have their lessons, and then of course there are those who teach in other ways, in other things, but I like to be with the young people and I like to play the games. I mean, I'm like a game of football and all that sort of thing, and the boys like it, they enjoy it, and we can talk and we go for walks into the countryside. You know, people don't realise it. This is a very real world. This isn't a wishy-washy how-to-do, you know. We have many other things that you associate with your world. Music festivals we have, lectures we have. We have no theatres, or what you would term theatres, where plays are put on by great actors and actresses. But they're always doing things which, although they're very entertaining, sometimes even amusing, we have a good laugh. There's some sense behind it. There's a purpose, there's a moral. You know, nothing is done just in a frivolous sense. Everything has a purpose and a meaning, but it's very important because sometimes you get souls who are in need of instruction, and it's sometimes a good idea to show them, as it were, almost themselves, as they want, you know,
yeah.
And give them an insight into their own character and their own nature, perhaps pick out certain faults or deficiencies, which perhaps they've not always been conscious of.
Mm-hmm.
And they can see themselves in sometimes just characters that are portrayed in the plays and things, you see.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's very interesting. I know this must sound stupid to some people, I suppose, and yet when you think what other people believe about life after death and all that sort of love, you know what some of those people believe in. What we say certainly is no more ridiculous, is it?
No.
It takes some of the stupid nonsense that's talked about and preached and accepted by the religious people. I mean, at least we do tell you what we know, and even though some people may not be able to accept it, it certainly sense from the point of view that this is a world of reality, and we have many of the things which you ask, who knows, from accustom yourselves to on earth. We have many, many joys and pleasures and happinesses. It's not a miserable world. It's not a world where everybody goes around singing hymns and praising the Lord. It's not a stupid sort of religious textbook kind of world, you know. It's a world of reality in which people live normal, natural lives, and there's understanding and affection and love and appreciation, and you get together. You have parties, not quite in the same sense that you have parties, not from the point of view of drinking and all that nonsense, get-togethers and discussions and talking about old times and old friends, and sometimes we all troop down together to earth to see how certain people are getting on and if we can help them in any way, what we do. Of course, sometimes there's not much we can do, but we do everything we can to help. You know, not only the people we know, either we get very disturbed and unhappy about the state of the world. And when we realize this need, then whole groups of souls return to earth to help. I mean, the trouble you've got out in the east there.
Mm-hmm.
Prayer, the souls to the side of going to rescue and to help people who have been not sent over suddenly through the war and that show.
It's a bit
terrible, isn't it? This war.
Can you, when you say when you come to earth, can you describe at all what you actually feel like when you come from your sphere and you come to the earth vibration? What is the actual change you feel in yourself?
Well, it's very difficult to put that into words because, you see, it's like losing a state of consciousness to which you're accustomed, to which you're familiar, and becoming accustomed to another condition of life, that is your life on earth, which really, in a sense, we haven't got very much in common with anymore. The chief attraction, of course, is coming back to someone that you know, love, and who you are, to some extent, in tune with and harmony with, because of the close links you've had in the past, and you're drawn back by love, and therefore you discard temporarily, anyway, your own personal feelings in regard to your own environment which you've just left. In other words, you are quite happy to enter into the earth world temporarily, like, just to be of some blessing and help. But of course, we see your world in a very different light to what you do. We can enter into it and become very aware and very conscious of things that are going on, particularly with individuals that we're fond of. Yeah, but it's very difficult to explain because it's as if to us you are in a sort of mist or a fog, if you like. Together we can't see you. But, I think one thing that I notice anyway, I don't see, personally, I don't speak for others, I don't see colour with you people, with the earth. Not in the same sense that I did when I was on earth. When I say I don't see colour, it doesn't mean to say that I'm not conscious of colour, or I'm not in a sense aware of colour. It's as if I see everything around and about in your world, and even with people I'm very fond of, as if it's in black and white, like a sort of negative, as it were, of the reality. through the consciousness of individuals that I may be drawn to, for instance, or perhaps some particular place that interests me, through some sort of mental way, I don't know how to put this, I can be sort of conscious of colour and not necessarily seeing it. Actually, of course, you see, there isn't such a thing that I'm told scientifically. I mean, they ask, I don't know the answers, but I'm told scientifically there isn't any such thing as colour, really.
But it's made up of...
I don't know if it's made up of, but they tell me that colour is non-existent, really. Actually, if you get down to rock bottom, what I can make out of it, in a sense, your world, although it's a reality to you, is an illusion to us. The same as, I suppose, when you people think about our world, you don't see it in a sense, unless you're very fortunate. It's a sort of mental sort of, I say apparition, but you sort of imagine so-and-so and you construct so-and-so according to your thoughts and ideas. But our world is reality. But your world isn't a real world in the same sense it is to you. We know through your thoughts what's happening to you individually, what's happening to you as a nation or a group of people or family, you see. And it's through your thoughts that we are able to make some link or contact and perhaps have some service and some help. But many of the things that are happening to you are thought creations which man has brought into being, if to you in the physical sense, and you suffer from these things naturally, because they are realities in a physical way. But you must remember that when we come to you, we are not really in a sense fully conscious of you in a physical sense, we are more conscious of you in a mental sense. And we receive inspiration, if you like, or thought impression, in various ways, through various people, but instead of saying the physical sense is this to you, we realize that our thoughts can help you, they do help you, sometimes more than perhaps you may even get prayed for, but the point is we never cease to try to help as best we can, up against it, of course, quite a lot of things we don't seem to be able to do much about. But of course a lot depends on the people on earth. It's only when they start to think in a different channel or have the desire to think in a different way that we can help them to an emerging state.
So going back to the children just a bit, I've often wondered when a child dies, the first they have nobody on the other side of it, they know, like they've never known their grandparents or anything like that. Aren't they
very bewildered and lost when you begin to look at them? Well, no. Quite frankly, strange as it may seem to you, children are never so lost as adults. My experience has been that the children are the least problem. The children are the ones who seem almost automatically to be able to enter into their new life full of, well, contentment and peace, you know. There's none of this sort of feeling that you get in a lot of adults. I think that children, well, of course they're always cared for, there are always people to care for them, love them, and to help them. There's always many, many, many souls who are only too happy to take in the children, to look after the children, and there are schools and there are places where they can be guided and helped and instructed and brought up and comforted. In fact, I'd go so far as to say the children are much happier in coming over than ever the adults are, but I think it is the adults bring over so many thoughts and ideas and preconceived notions and are so full of their own, well, you might say, I don't say importance, but full of their own inconsistencies, you might say, you know, they've got all strong sort of ideas about this, that, and the other, and often, of course, they come here and they've got a lot on their mind, a lot of regrets, and lots of things they've done and said over the years, and the faults in their nature, you know, that they're very conscious of. Oh, no, I think the most problematic, difficult situation is for an adult children are no problem whatsoever. There is no unhappiness where the children are concerned, but you often find that unhappiness with the adults.
Well, if they do leave their parents behind, their parents can get their mums, especially they can go over and sleep there.
Oh, yes, that's true. And the children are always well cared for, and they're soon, as I put it, you know, made comfortable, and they soon acclimatise themselves to their new life. Believe me, that's happiness. Well, it's possible for anyone to be. I mean, they soon settle down and harmonize with everything, and they've got so many interests and so much to learn. And of course, if they want, they can be brought back temporarily to their people. But I think somehow about children, as you know, it's marvelous, really, how soon they get used to new conditions and surroundings. Much worse for adults, you know, much worse. When is your Mr. Woods coming again?
And we come again, I hope.
Well, I sent him a letter to him. He says, you know, I've heard a lot of luck being before to see you, but in these meetings when you've been here, I've stood aside and listened, you know. Perhaps next time he'll come up, maybe I'll have a word to do with him.
Yes, I'm sure he'd like it.
Anyway, I can't stay now, but all the very best to you, my dear.
Thank you.
And I'd like to come again and talk to you if I can.
Thank you for coming.
All the best. I must go.
Bye-bye. Thank you so much.
Bye-bye, Auntie.
Goodbye.
It was so interesting, wasn't it?
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye, Mum.